edition of Overreaction Buffalo. I am the Big O, Jerry Ostrowski, joining you here Thursday night. We're a little bit late, but I'll tell you why in a minute, because I'm fired up. I'm willing to be way late for this guy, and I'll introduce him to you in a second. But as always, if you're watching on X, if you're watching on Facebook Live, click on over to YouTube. Once you get there, get in the comments like everybody else, Bella, Richard Rush, David, come on over, interact with the other fans, the other people that are listening. If you say something good, we'll pop it on the show. And as always, hit the like, hit the subscribe button. When you subscribe, it goes a long, long way. And I'll tell you what, again, I'm extremely excited today to introduce my guest on this Thursday night show. And he is a third-round pick out of Ohio State. He is a former cornerback for the Buffalo Bills, a tremendous football player, an awesome teammate, and quite frankly, an awesome individual. Marlon Kerner joined us on tonight's show. Marlon, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing well, brother. How about yourself?
I am doing good. I know I'm down here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We've talked a couple times before we got on your show, talking a little college football, and I'm sure we'll do that again in the future.
Absolutely.
And we'll get to, when we get to the end of the show, I'll give you a chance before I ask you the final question. I'll give you an opportunity to let the listeners know where they can find you. But right now you're in Buffalo, and we talked a little bit off air about what you're doing. And, you know, I know that you used to be the director of player development for the Bills for a while. Then you got into doing some other things. Let the listeners in on what you got going on in Buffalo, because I think it's awesome.
So currently I took a new role, getting away from football. I just spent some time with family and trying some other things. And I now have a role with the Community Foundation for Greater Buffalo. I am officially the director of client relations and CGLI. And that's just a fancy term for saying I have some people that have funds and they have some philanthropic goals that they like to do within taking care of other organizations, and they have grants and wishes that they want to give out to make sure they give back to the Western New York community. So we just help facilitate that, make sure it goes smoothly. But the other half of what I do, which I'm really proud of, which is really interesting, is the CGLI stands for Communities of Giving Legacy Initiative. And what it is it's a fund that's held at the Community Foundation. A lot of Black leaders in early 2000s came together and said, we need to figure out a way to bring up and develop the next generation of givers, to make sure that we have people that are also looking at both sides of it, to make sure that Buffalo itself is taken care of. And so what we do is we really go through, we're teaching the younger generation, we say trailblazing youth of color in Western New York, teaching them about philanthropy, teaching them about why it's important to give back, more importantly, how to give back. So we have a program called TYP, which stands for the Young Philanthropist Program. We purchase a curriculum. We have the Buffalo Urban League actually administers that program, and we're getting people in at the high school level, teaching them about philanthropy, teaching them ins and outs of why it happens. How do you get a grant? How philanthropy helps offset some of the things that the government does, and why the government is out so much about trying to get these the DAF money out in the community, because it helps offset some of the things that the government does. And then we also send 10 kids a year to Washington, D.C. for close-up, giving them a peek behind what it looks like to be in the legislative branch and learn why and how laws are made and why we do certain things in our community. So we take them there to D.C. for a week, and then we get them in with Mayor Byron Brown and other people of his staff, so they can really understand what it's like to kind of make policy, and then hopefully maybe turn somebody into a new politician, but more importantly, really just help them learn about philanthropy and how they can give back to support their own community. So I'm loving the role, loving what we're trying to do, and I'm 5 months into it, so a lot to learn, but definitely Buffalo is like home, and you run across so many people that you've come across another pathway. So it's just, hey, I know you. Hey, what are you doing? I'm doing this now. We should talk. So I'm loving doing all those things.
I don't think people understand just philanthropy, giving kindness to other people. It's something that starts at a young age. You learn those things, and it's amazing that you guys are doing that with the kids and community of Buffalo. And I just want to say thanks. I think it's awesome, and you're making a difference. And again, thanks for coming on tonight. But I just want to kind of shift a little bit. You know, I'm an O-line guy, right, Marlon? I punch people and knock people down and drag people, move people from point A to point B. You played a position, 43 career games over your career before, obviously, just a terrible, terrible, unfortunate injury. you played 43 games at what I think is the hardest position in football, playing cornerback, being outside, being on an island, playing against the other team's top receivers. And just, I wanted to get your viewpoint on this. I understand, but I don't understand. It's kind of, you know, a lot of people think they understand offensive line play, but until you get in the middle of it, you do it, you don't understand it.
Right.
So kind of real quick as we move along, the first thing I want to say, just your overall general view of this Buffalo Bills secondary, especially let's talk about the cornerbacks first. Obviously, Rasul Douglas, Benford, Johnson, just kind of your thoughts on this group of cornerbacks before, and I'm going to move that into another area here in a moment, but just your thoughts on that view of cornerbacks for this team.
Well, I like those three guys. I think when you look at Taron Johnson and Rasul Douglas, proven. I was a fan of watching Rasul Douglas when he was with the Packers. So when we made that trade, I'm like, that is a great trade. And you didn't know what it was going to look like because you were hoping that maybe Trey gets healthy. We don't know what that's going to look like. But he showed that, hey, listen, he can play. He about 30 tackles, 4 picks. In those 7 games that he was here with us. So he definitely played very well for what he was able to do with us. Taron Johnson, proven that top nickel corner in the game. He plays every down. Like, it's amazing because when we played, you know, and you were there with Wade and those guys, like, we had packages. Like, when we would try to match up with certain guys, like, so if we got a matchup we didn't like, we bring in a linebacker to kind of match up so that we had fast linebackers like Marlo Perry. But the Bills are like, we like Taron Johnson. Taron's strong in the run game. So he definitely makes plays. Like, he makes it go on that defense. He takes on those blockers. And you don't normally see guys that small win at the point of contact, but he does. And he makes plays and he gets around there. So those three guys, Benford got banged up a little bit last year, but he was the number two guy. He was a guy starting. When he got hurt, Dane Jackson came in. Those top three is where you're like, okay, I like what we have there. But if Benford goes down or Douglas goes down, who's behind it? Like, that, those are the question marks that you have.
Right.
And I like our first round draft pick from a few years ago. I think he's going to figure out eventually. And I think this is the learning curve that everybody's like, well, why isn't he playing like this? Or why is he not playing like this player? Everybody has their own learning curve. And I think that's where we are. We're waiting to see if he can turn the page and kind of figure that part out. But outside of that, they're pretty thin right now. I'm not going to say they're thin. They're pretty unproven
right after
that point. So we don't know who they drafted, who they brought in, if one of those guys are going to step up and be able to make plays. But as of now, when you look at it on paper, they're just unproven behind those three guys.
Now, I want you to hold that thought on Elam, because I'm going to come back to that. And I want to ask you a question because of your experience playing the position. Today it was announced Jalen Waddle agrees to a 3-year extension worth $84.75 million, including $76 million guaranteed. Absolutely insane numbers out of South Florida, and they still got to pay Tua and everybody else, right?
Right.
I think, are you seeing this trend because we're paying so many receivers? Receivers has become such a point of emphasis, because I would think if you look at NFL football right now, 11 personnel, 3 wideouts. It's probably played about 90 to 95% of the time now. Would you not say?
Yeah. It's about 90, 95% of the time. Yeah, you're right.
So obviously the cornerback position is even more important. You said something earlier. You talked about when Wade was there and we didn't see something like we brought in packages. Has the game of football with the no huddle and the up-tempo offenses, has it changed the outside play? Has it changed the type of guys you have to have, more well-rounded guys as opposed to somebody that does one thing really, really good where you can sub them out for another? Maybe you got to be more well-rounded to play cornerback in this point in time?
Politically, I'll say yes. But I think really what really has changed is the way they referee the game, the way the rules have changed on what you can get away with on the outside is so much more different than when I played the game. Like, we could get up there, you could maul guys, you could grab guys, you could do all kind of things. You could have a little incidental contact and the hand fighting down the field. And it was okay. It wouldn't get called. Like, it would go, you pretty much had like a 75-25 that it would go in your favor. You know, you didn't win too many. You didn't lose too many of those battles. The rest of them, like, hey, you got to let him go. Like, we played a playoff game when Thurman went crazy. We beat the Dolphins 34-21. Mm-hmm. And I remember I moved on a slot on one play, and I literally beat this guy at the line. I undressed him at the line. Like, when he got up, shoulder pads hanging out, it was a mess. And the ref just came to me and said, hey, listen, you did a good job at the initial point of contact, and you held on too long. He's like, you're going to have to let him go, or I'm going to have to flag you.
Right.
They don't do that now. Like, you know, you put a finger on a guy, and it looks like, and they're good at acting now, and it looks like you impeded his route. They're throwing a flag. So you have to be a little bit more on your heels. You can't be as physical with certain guys, because they're going to get an automatic call. So it just changes the way you approach. And then when you add the no huddle and the way guys with the up-tempo on the offense, yeah, you can't sub. So now you got to have a guy like Taron Johnson that can play the run, but also play the pass. And so we didn't always have that. Teams were a little bit more bigger with their tight ends and bigger on their tackle. So you didn't really want to have a guy like Taron Johnson or my size really trying to come in and kick out a pulling guard or a pulling tackle from the other side, because they were going to probably win that battle.
When we talked about Kyrie Elam, and I was going to ask you this question as a guy that's done it, and I'm sure there was a point in time in your career and in all of our careers, I've had it in my career, when you're sitting out there playing, you know, right tackle, and you're playing against a guy and having issues, and you're on an island and you lose that confidence.
Yes.
How do you take a guy like Elam? What do you do as a coach what would you do if you were coaching him to get his confidence back? Because yes, I think some of it is learning the playbook, learning the ropes and all that stuff like you talked about earlier. But I do think there is a piece of it that is confidence. And especially with being the first round pick a couple years ago and having that extra pressure of being a first round pick, how do you get a young corner's confidence back to where he goes out and starts playing with that, you know, with his chest out and playing with that swag again, like you like to see those guys do?
There's a lot you have to do. And really to unpack it, one, he's got to, and I know they have this on staff, he's got to go and probably talk with the sports psych and kind of say, okay, how do I let certain things go? You know, now you're in a league where you're only as good as the last play that you played, right? So right. Now you've got to be able to learn how to come up with some strategies to kind of say, let it go. You're not, one, don't read Twitter. Stay off of that. Stop scrolling. Because thankfully, when we played, we didn't have Twitter. So people yes. either had to write you or call you names to your face. And how many people are going to call you names to your face? Like, right. You, definitely not. Me, they can call me out of names all they want. Right? And I'm just going to walk by and be like, whatever. So he's got to learn how to do that, right? Like, stop scrolling. But then it's more importantly, like, okay, if, and I know the terminology is pretty much the same. You've been in the same system for a while. So now it's got to be, okay, when I do this, I do that. And then he's got to have a better understanding of what his default buttons are, right? Because when you get in a tough situation and play, we don't think about this a lot, but it took me a while to really realize, like, you have habits that are already formed. And when it goes south, you automatically go back to the habits that are already built into yep. you automatically. You don't even think about it. You yep. go to those habits. He needs to know what those triggers are and those habits are, so that he can either, one, reprogram it so that his natural reaction is to do what the coaches are asking, or he needs to learn how to stay calm enough in a situation where he doesn't just, like, get too frazzled, where he just, like, throws everything out the window and says, uh-oh, wait a minute, I got to go back. Because when you get in that fight or flight mode, which we all do, even playing that game, if you can take a deep breath and remain calm and start thinking, like, well, if he does this, I need to do this, that's when the great ones are able to really control it. If you can't control your own thought process and really control how and regulate your emotions, then that's when you get in trouble. And I think he just needs to learn how to do some emotional regulation. It took me a long time to learn how to do it. And I learned, if I took my emotion out of it, like, just remain calm, stay even keel. Like, it doesn't matter, good play or bad play, we're going to high five, we're going to walk back. And that's it. Like, we don't dwell on it. And you breathe, you have certain breathing techniques to kind of stay calm. If he can get to that point, then I think he'll be able to start making those plays. And you saw that at times late in the season. Like, he made some plays, he had an interception, Like, okay, but then you saw times where he just, like, he played really fast. And he's the type of person, looks like when he gets fast and he gets ahead of it, that's where he makes those mistakes. And he just needs to learn how to take it easy, breathe, control it, and just let the game play around him. And he just reacts to what he sees as opposed to trying to be like, oh, I think he's going to run this. And then he jumps around and they do something different. So if he can do those things, I think he'll be able to turn it around. And that's a hard thing to do for a player. And he needs some strong coaches around him. And that's why I miss Trey being back there, because I thought Trey would be really good for him. Because Trey was a master at being very even keeled, never too high, never too low, just very consistent so that he could regulate his emotions and play at a high level all the time.
You know, Marlon, and it would seem to me that the great corners, the corners that the play, you know, the ones we all talk about, they seem to have that ability. And like you talked about Trey just being, you know, easy and smooth, they almost have that ability to dictate where they want that the receiver to go without even kind of going over the top doing it. You know what I mean? And I think that's where Elam is right now. He's still a little on his heels, and the receivers, he's reacting to the receiver more than him making the receiver do what he wants. And my question to you is this: as a guy that comes from the SEC that plays at Florida, who's playing against the best receivers in the country week in and week out. I know you think it's at Ohio State, but, you know, they do have really good ones in the SEC.
I'll give you that SEC. The SEC is probably the top conference right now. Yes, I'll give you that.
Well, but you've had some really, really good ones over the past so many years get drafted very, very high, including this season with Marvin Harrison Jr. But when you take that player who was a in-your-chest physical press corner, you draft him in the first round, and now you're teaching him a lot of cover two zone techniques and more of a passive type game.
Right.
Is that more of a miss on the front office of bringing, you know, did they put him in a bad spot because that's not what his skill set is, or should you be able to flip and do both? I mean, is it hard to go from being an aggressive press man corner to playing predominantly zone?
For some players, yes. When you get overly aggressive and that's what you want to do all the time, then it's difficult to kind of say, let me turn that off and dial that back. And it seems like that's where he kind of struggles in space, because in space, it's definitely a lot different because there's so much room. You're off. You don't get to impede the receiver like you would want to. So it really now is about your technique and how disciplined are you and how do you recognize the route release, because that is a big portion. When you talked about those guys being able to, looks like they effortlessly control and dictate how they're going to run it. What it is they just recognize their route release and recognize when he comes here, he gets at this split, he's going to run possibly these three combinations. So there's a lot of film study that goes along with that. And then kind of being able to read and react and say, okay, well, he stemmed inside, so he's going to try to run it out. So I've got to hold my position here and don't take this fake and watch this type of drag. Or if he does a stutter, he's doing this. And so when you're pressing, you get to dictate, you get to kind of control it. When you're playing off, you have to be very disciplined saying, okay, I'm going to give up this route. That's okay. Right. I'll bank the tackle. I won't give up this route. I have help here. And so if you don't really understand the scheme and understand the split, the down and distance, if you're not in your playbook enough and understanding the tendencies of what they do when they get in this formation, if they go 2x2, if they have a 2x2 split with a motion or a back offset to the side, they typically run these type of routes in this combination. If you don't understand it, if you're not disciplined to really understand that week in and week out, then that's when you start to struggle, because then you're kind of guessing. And as you know, it doesn't matter what position you're in. If you're guessing on what your opponent's going to do, you pretty much guess wrong most of the time.
You know, that's why I have so much respect for you and what you did in the cornerback position, because like us, you've got you're backpedaling and you got really fast guys running downhill at you. You're one of the only other positions that does the same thing that we do up front when we're trying to pass block, when you're backpedaling trying to play against these fast receivers. So no, I totally get that. And you know, I think that last year he probably had some injury issues. He had the ankle, and I'm hoping that with Bobby Babbage Jr. being the DC now, maybe a little bit different approach, a little younger, a little lighter, a little more energetic. That'll get his career moving as well.
I hope so, but I love Bobby Babbage Jr. I was there with both Bobby junior and senior, and they're both a hoot. they're both really funny.
Well, see, senior, I know senior. I know them very well. They're senior played at Tulsa like I did.
Yeah,
I actually helped coach the offensive line some when I played at Tulsa, so I've known him for quite a while. Know his
good dude,
wife,
good family,
yes, amazing people.
But Bobby is a really I love Bobby because you're right. He brings all that energy, but he's really good at really stressing. Here's a technique. Here's what they're doing here. Here's your keys. Like, he was very good at getting Jordan and Micah when he was coaching the safeties. And then you saw what the linebackers did the last few years when he went and moved to linebackers. Right. And Tremaine probably had one of his best years as a pro, even with the Bills, and then went on to sign that massive contract with the Bears because of the coaching that he got. Like, he's just fundamentally sound. He's going to have those guys there, and he does a really good approach because he will find how to relate to you. And I think that's going to be really good for Kyer to kind of really kind of say, we've got a defense coordinator, so we need to figure out how to help him get it. And so hopefully this is the year, you know, you only get so much time to kind of say, hey, you're going to figure this out before they decide to move on. So, you know, he's got this season, and then, you know, that's where they'll kind of make that decision. All right, do we extend him? Do we kind of give him another year? What are we going to do? So I hope he figures it out, because I think he is a talented player, and you don't want to see him go somewhere else and thrive. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it just ends up being it just wasn't a good fit. So I'm hoping that's not the answer here. Hopefully he turns it around.
Right, because the hardest thing for guys to learn, and you talked about it, if I'm in my stance and I can see the formation, I can see the split, I can see the stance of the receiver – if I know we're running on defense, and I call it situational awareness. If a player can learn situational awareness, pre-snap reads, right?
Right.
If I know at corner that I've got that two-thirds of the field I don't got to worry about because of the defense that's being called, the way the receivers are, the formation, and I know that I only got to worry about this third, your success rate goes up really, really exponentially.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
And I think that's where these young guys struggle. And we're going to talk about another young guy in a minute that I want to get your opinion on. But Marlon Kerner joined this former Buffalo Bills cornerback, third-round pick out of Ohio State, kind enough to join us tonight. I know he's got a busy schedule like all of us. But I want to move to that safety spot, Marlon. And, you know, we talk about Tyler Rapp. We talk about Mike Edwards. Mm-hmm. Even Cam Lewis is in that equation a little bit. I don't know about DeMar, what's going to happen with him. We lose our two goats, right? We lose Poyer and we lose Hyde. Now, you know, I don't know if the stories of Hyde's demise are premature or not. I mean, there's a lot of people dangling out there saying that he would come back if he was going to play for the Bills. We don't know yet. I think we have to probably see how some of these other guys, you know, transpire and how they grow through training camp. But we take the third round pick, like you, your third round pick as well, and we put it. We go ahead and draft Cole Bishop out of Utah, and on paper, on film, everything matches up.
Right.
But again, like Elam, you got to get this guy ready to play in the NFL. I guess it's a two-part, just kind of your kind of general assessment of the safety room, and then let's dig a little bit into Cole Bishop and what you think about him, and can he start as a day one starter for the Bills?
I think he can. One, I'll answer the second question. I think he could start as a day one starter for the Bills. It just depends on how fast he can pick up the offense. I think when you look at losing Poyer and Hyde, you not only lose the guys that were productive, very productive for their career. I mean, looking at last year, 155 tackles or 156 tackles between the two of them, a couple interceptions, some sacks, and that's low productivity for them for the season, right? Like, generally, you're going to see both of them have like three or four interceptions. Right. Poyer probably have more sacks, but you know, it was just one of those seasons where injuries caught up with both of them. I know Jordan pretty much played the entire season injured. There was just a lot going on with him, Hyde in a neck injury. And so those are things you're like, all right, well, they were getting old. Because it's easy to say they're getting old. It's time to move on. Yeah, we understand that's how the game is. That's the business. That's the nature of this business. But then you talk about the leadership. Like, they were with Coach McDermott from day one. Those are two guys they identified as we need to have them. They were in the system. They knew the ins and the outs of the system. So even when they weren't playing, you had another coach on the sideline that says, hey, look for this, look for that. When you're looking in the film room and studying all week, even if they knew they weren't going to play, you had somebody you can go to as a player, especially as a young player. Hey, what did you see on this? What am I doing here? What could I have done differently on this play, even in practice? How are you approaching the game? How are you studying? Hey, come to my house. I'm going to show you how to do certain things. Hey, meet me in the film room. We're going to spend another extra hour at the end of practice. Here's how you take care of your body. All the little nuances that go into being a pro, you also lose that with them being gone. So you don't have the people that you can bounce ideas off of. You don't have that extra quarterback on the field. And those guys were the quarterbacks on the field. Like, and they got everybody lined up in the secondary. They knew what checks to make. They knew when they were in the bad defenses. McDermott could look at them and say, we're going to do this on the fly. They could get it done. So that's when you look at that room. You don't have anybody in the secondary that's been around long enough, except for Rapp. So he's kind of the guy. So that's why I say he's probably going to be the starter. You bought in Edward. So it's kind of like, all right, those are going to be probably your two starters. I do think Cole Bishop is going to be somebody that's going to be in play because just the way the nature of the game is. They also lost Saran Neal as a big corner that they could bring in. So I would naturally assume that Rapp would be that guy or Bishop would be that guy that could come in. And you could interchange him and Rapp either way. It just depends on who has a better camp, who picks it up better. But that's the difference right now. Rapp has a head start. He already has been in this offense or in this defense for two seasons. So now you're asking Cole Bishop to come in, learn a whole new defense, depending on if they're going to play him as Micah or as Jordan, depending on what it looks like. If you're in a box, you know, sometimes you can be a little bit more physical. He's got the size to do that. So it might fit more into his scheme better. If you're the guy like Mike at the end, kind of being that quarterback and the free safety and that middle fielder, then yeah, that's a little bit different because now you're covering up everybody and you've got to have a great feel on your corners. You got to have a great feel on what your strong safety is going to do. If you're going to be that free safety, how they're going to try to attack you. So that's all the little nuances that go into it. And that's a lot to learn. And you know it when you play, what's the biggest thing that everyone talks about as a rookie that you got to get acclimated to. It's not the amount of stuff they give you to learn because you can pick that up. It's right. The speed of the game, how yes. fast it moves, how fast it yep. comes in. And all of a sudden you're like, oh gosh, like I learned this tempo in preseason. It was fast. And then now it's even more faster. When you look at it at when the regular season started, and then if you make it to the playoffs, it's even more. So it's getting used to the speed of the game and how fast it comes at you and all those things. And so that's where he's got to make a stride. So hopefully they're going to bring some other veterans to kind of help him get there. And I know that coaching staff pretty well. And some of the coaching staff there, they're going to have him ready. It's just mentally, can he come in and can he produce? If he can produce, he's going to be on the field. Like, they will definitely play him.
With your time as director of player development there, just kind of real quick, and I know COVID kind of changed a lot of things, but I remember hearing some press conferences and Cole Bishop talking about how he was on Zoom meetings almost daily. Has the teaching changed a lot since we played? I mean, they've got money more. It seems like you can't go anywhere in the world now without them saying, hey, man, get on that Zoom call. We're going to talk about this. I mean, has the teaching changed? Has the amount of time spent? I know OTAs are a joke, man. John and I laugh about this every day. It's like, man, it's too stressful to wear a helmet. I can't wear a helmet, right?
Right, right.
How has that teaching and learning changed? I mean, since you were around it, you know, not only as a player, then, you know, 20 years later as a guy up there in the administration and in the front office with the staff, how have things changed? Is it a lot different or is it still the same?
There are aspects that are very still similar, right? You still have to learn it. You've got to figure out how you're going to take the information they're giving you and then how are you going to soak it up and then retain it so that you can go back and perform on the field. I think it's different because, you know, we were walking away with big old binders and all the stuff that's photocopied and three-hole yeah. punch and like take this with you. It's on an iPad. Everything is iPad. Everything is digital. So it's all right there. You log in. You get your practice film immediately on the iPad. So by the end of the night, you're able to go back, look at the practice film.
Right.
You can look at all those things. Even after a game, like guys are bringing their iPads on the plane, giving it to the IT, like put the game on here. I want to be able to go back and grade myself and look at the mistakes. Win or loss, go back and see what I did. They can leave comments on the iPad and tell you, look, work on certain techniques, do this, do that. So it just, there's the tools are better. It makes it more efficient for you, but the guys still have to put in work. And they can tell, like they can tell when you log in. I think that's the thing that's different from us is you know, nobody would know. I mean, you know, we had a player, one of our teammates that famously gave the speech of, if I had actually studied the playbook this week, I might've had a better game, right? Like if you don't log in, they know when you're not logging in, they can track all those things. So you have to log in, you have to do the study that you need. And if they feel like you're not studying, they can say, hey, stay later. I need to talk to you, I need to walk through some things. You have walkthroughs, you have like they have structured it so that you can get everything you need as a player to be successful. And if you need additional things, you can ask for it, and a coach will stay late or an assistant coach will stay late, or you can walk through another player and do all those things. They've got screens in the weight room where you can actually line up and put defenses and line things up, say this is the formation we think they're going to get, and you can say, oh, this is the corner, I'm lined up here. It's pretty amazing. The technology has made it so that you can be pretty efficient. And so that's where mental reps were. When you look at Micah, maybe he didn't practice 1 week, he could be very efficient because he can get some mental reps and do some walkthroughs and be mentally prepared and ready to go. Whereas before we needed to get out there and see it and be able to do a jog or walkthrough or something to be able before we could play. So I love it. I mean, I remember watching a guy, Saran Neal, his rookie year coming in, and he was like, I'm a visual learner coach. And I'm like, all right, so how are we going to learn it? And he literally was taking Skittles. Like, it was amazing to watch a kid take his playbook, look there, and he's laying Skittles out in different colors, and this is the formation, and I'm this color Skittle, and when they do this, I do that. But that's what he did to kind of figure out the playbook and learn it, and he made the team that year.
Right.
Like, hey, man, look, I said, I'm not going to knock anything. Whatever you need to do to be successful, you do it. And so I laughed because I was like, I ate the Skittles. I wasn't putting them out there, but I got you. I understand it. But he made the team. He ended up being a really good, strong special teams player for us. And so that's another guy that they lost out of the secondary. He went off to Miami as well. Right. So, you know, you got a guy that had size, that could run, that could play safety. He could play on the nickel as well. If you wanted to go jumbo nickel and bring in him and Taryn, he was one of those guys. So you've got some holes to fill in that secondary, but you know, those are some of the things that guys are going to have to figure out. And that's what Bishop is going to have to learn how to do is, can he, whatever he needs to do to figure out and learn it, can he do that as a rookie coming in? And then I think he'll be fine. I think he's definitely dubbed as a guy to eventually be one of those starters.
Marlon, real quick, let everybody know what you're doing. You got some good stuff out there. You do a vidcast as well once the football season starts up. Let listeners know where they can find you.
So I am on YouTube. We are on all the other platforms. We have a podcast called What Happened on Saturdays with Marlon Kerner, because there's so many people to talk about Bills football, and I'm a Buckeye fan at heart. So why not talk about college football? And so last year we did it with a really heavy emphasis on Ohio State and the opponents they were playing. But you can check us out. We are definitely under that Cover One Sports umbrella. So that's where you can find us on their YouTube channel. They have a college football channel there, and all of our shows are up now. And then we're working on season two. Right now we're on a little hiatus just because there's not a lot of college football going on. But lots of information, lots of news coming out about how it's going to impact players and the payments and what they can get. So you and I will have to have another conversation about what that might look like going forward.
I would love to. I've got some other people that might be able to help you as well. Just let me know, because they're knee deep in this stuff. They live for me. No, thank you. I just read the paper. But hey, last question I got for you. In a couple days is June 1st. When June 1st hits, we'll realize the $10 million cap relief that we get from the release of Trey White. When you look at this secondary, you look at this defense, do you feel that that Brandon Bean needs to go out and get another piece or two? Because I think that everybody has been so hyper-focused on this wide receiver room that you're not going to take that $10 million and do some kind of trade and go out and bring a guy like T. Higgins or, you know, Jefferson in or somebody like that. But do you see them going out and taking maybe that $10 million and going to try to find another piece in the secondary or on this defense to help this team out? Because as you said, I like these guys, but if something happens, which 18-week season nowadays, it's probably going to happen.
Right,
you don't have a lot of depth.
I don't think they do anything right off the beginning and say, we got to go get somebody, unless there's just a June 1st cut where it's like, hey, we didn't think this guy was going to be available. We're going to go get him. And hopefully he signs for the vet minimum. But I think they would probably take a wait and see approach. The Bills are one of the few teams that are always trying out guys. They always bring guys in during the season just to try them out, work them out, see how they're doing, always making moves and making changes with their practice squad players. They'll go in and they'll work out corners constantly. They'll bring a corner, sign a corner, release a guy, do this, do that. So I don't see them being active players right off the bat. But I think you'll go to camp and see what these guys look like. And if you don't like it, then yes, you'll go and find somebody. You'll go look and see what it might look like. Hyde's still on the table if he's healthy. But I would see him as a guy that's after week one. So you would really get through training camp, get through week one. And then if you don't like the way your safety is, if you have a major injury and he's there, then you would say, okay, Micah, come on back. Because he already knows the offense, or I keep saying offense. He already knows the defense. He's already been a guy that's been a leader on the team. He already has relationships with most of the people there. So I could see him coming, but I wouldn't see it that until maybe week two or later is when that might happen. But you're going to take that $10 million. You're going to look at it. They've already identified guys that they would say he could be released. And you could see somebody making a trade. I could see them using that to parlay somebody that maybe was a surprise cut after everything was done. Bolster it. Like, hey, you know what? Let's go get this guy. We like this guy. Right. He's a better addition. Because then you're getting value. Guys kind of want to make sure they pay. If you can claim a guy on waivers, that always works better for you. Because now you're like, I've got a little lower of the salary cap hit. Because you want to do that. I think they keep that salary cap to themselves to be able to use it throughout the season if they need to. And then it gives you to release what you want to do and relief for what you want for 2025. Because that's what you're playing for. And you did all those moves so that you can have a little bit more freedom in 2025.
Well, Fien and I have already said, if Micah Hyde shows up to training camp, we're going to drive up there. He needs to hire us as an agent because we will not allow him anywhere near the place until after training camp is over. Because as you know, there ain't no other way to say it. Training camp sucks, man. It's not fun. But anyway, hey, Marlon, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us. And hopefully we can get you back on sometime here in the near future. But again, this is a Thursday edition of Overreaction Buffalo. I am the Big O, Jerry Ostrowski. He is Marlon Kerner. And as always, go Bills.
Go Bills.